And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from an undisclosed hotel location in beautiful, and man, is it beautiful, San Francisco, California, where I am joined to talk about presumably the 2019 NBA Finals with the one and only, the Hall of Famer. I have not had you on since that happened. The Hall of Famer, Doris Burke. How you doing?
Superb. And I love how you do that intro to your podcast in exactly the same cadence. Welcome to The Low Post. I'll be on a treadmill in Philadelphia just going to your podcast, but that's my intro. And you've got that funky, like, I can't make sounds very well, but that music that sort of intros it as well.
I don't have anything to do with that. I don't know what, apparently there's intro music. I don't know.
Well, it's like the sound. It's like, I shouldn't say music. It's the sound, this funky.
Oh, that whoosh. It's
yes,
like a whoosh.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to have a theme song that they're playing basket,
oh,
and then copyright.
Please.
Copyright
I
things.
Loved that as a kid. You got, okay, picture young me as a high schooler.
Jersey Shore or Long Island?
Jersey Shore. I asked my parents for a boombox for Christmas or whatever.
Best.
And I have the boombox in Indian Hill Park in a little Jersey Shore town called Manasquan, and I'm playing that song. I can't sing worth a damn, so I'm not going there, but yeah, I was rocking.
That's awesome. I never had a boombox. I went right to Walkman.
Oh yeah, see, you're a little younger than me. Boombox, I thought I was cool. Do you know, my freshman year, I wore some Puma Clydes.
Wow.
Low Puma Clydes.
Freshman year of high school or college?
Freshman year of high school. I'm dating myself. I'm 53. White Puma leather Clydes with a black stripe. The only reason I could afford them was the sporting goods store was going out of business, and they had them half off. I remember going home to my mom and saying, "Mom, they got these. I can wear them all season," and she let me. And so to see the Puma come back in the NBA, it's pretty cool.
Who'd they get? They got Ayton. Who else?
They got a lot of young guys. Bagley.
Bagley. That's right.
DeMarcus is wearing them. Terry Rozier is wearing them. Danny Green is wearing them, I feel like. Boy, that's pretty good.
That's not a bad roster.
I mean, that's a silly thing for me to notice and pay attention to. But I feel like if you're a basketball person, you do pay attention a little bit.
A little bit.
Well, I saw some guys in some new LeBrons. I thought, wow, those are some sharp-looking shoes. Because LeBron's had such a variance in his models, you know. Anyway, it's silly. Basketball shoes.
Did you do the end-of-the-year awards? Did you vote?
I did, yeah.
The name Bagley I put so much thought into these, and now we're like 6 weeks out. I'm like, I think I put Bagley on first team. Oh, yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
Do you know what I did this year for the first time? First of all, it's stressful. And after Clay doesn't get the $30 million, I'm like, I don't want to vote anymore. And I saw Howard Beck, who I love and think is tremendous. And I feel like he tweeted something like, this shouldn't be this way. And he made it clear to the league, I don't want to vote anymore. $30 million is a lot of money.
Well, my thing is, I haven't, and look, I understand, I don't particularly enjoy that aspect of voting. It sucks. You feel shitty about having any role in that. I am, however, proud to be a voter. I'm proud of the work I put in, as do you, to make what you think are the best possible votes.
No question.
And I have not been given an alternative that is a better collective wisdom.
Yeah.
When the players have been given the opportunity to vote on stuff, they don't take it seriously. Now, I think they would take this seriously, but the idea that, so the players' criticism of the media, which is, I think it's fair, is that, we don't understand the game like they do. Totally fine. I get it. Like, I defer.
Mm-hmm.
But they would bring a whole different set of biases. Teammates.
Oh, sure they would.
Friends.
No
agencies.
Question.
Like, I'm open to anything because I don't want to decide if Carl Anthony Towns gets X
right.
percent of his contract or not. I just haven't been given a better idea.
No, I agree. And I'll break down and vote, I'm sure, next year. One thing I do, to your point about the players, you know, so I was very torn for the MVP. And about 6 weeks out, I will start asking players and coaches, can you just give me your insight? Give me your input. And it's interesting to me to get their perspective and to hear, because they are the ones lining up nightly against these guys. They do hear the interactions amongst teammates. They know what, you know, anyway, I think it's a valuable exercise. I think that our eyes can tell us And certainly we have an incredible amount of information available to us, and all of that is helpful. I'm just like, I want the more information, the better. And I don't mind other voices, and then you ultimately have to weigh and then cast your vote.
Yeah, you got to weigh it. And I remember I do the same thing as you. I pull as many different kinds of people as I can just to make – maybe I'm just – in the end, though, I learned 2 years ago that I had – I just have to go with what makes me comfortable. Like yes. at a certain point, there's just something you fundamentally believe. And so like every player I asked 2 years ago, universally, young players, old players, now retired superstar players, all were like, why are you even thinking about it? It's Russell Westbrook. But you, and all of them were like, he averaged triple double. That's it. Case closed, open and closed. And I just like, I can't.
You didn't go there.
He wasn't the MVP for me. And like, wow. I almost changed and like,
yeah. Good for you.
In retrospect, I'm happy with the vote.
Listen, the courage of your conviction. I do like that the votes are public. You should have to answer for the things you've decided. I think that's smart.
Did you go Giannis?
I did.
Me too. And by the end, I was very torn. And I've said before, I think Harden had a really, really good case. The guy is an offense by himself. He's ungame planable to some degree. Just as close to that as there is anyone in the league, I think. I just, in my gut, for lots of reasons I've articulated, I think Giannis meant more to his friend. I just think Giannis had a better case. So, yeah. But if you voted for Harden, that's fine. I don't think you're wrong. Anyway.
You know what's been fascinating? I know we'll get to the NBA Finals, but forgive me just because you touched on Giannis. You know, I loved his thoughts post-Finals. There was a writer who I kind of, you know, he opened up and forgive me for
Eric not remembering. Eric Nem of The Athletic.
Thank you so much because there's so many good writers and I don't want to shortchange anybody. But I just loved his honesty about, you know, I have to think more like a guard. You know, he understood they exposed his weaknesses, that his game has to be better, more well-rounded. You know, it's interesting to watch when you're at practice. And I was at several Milwaukee games during the course of the regular season, 4 or 5, and watching that guy just shoot when he spot shooting. And I understand it's different because it's not game speed and it's not under duress. But that's going to come, and it's going to come consistently at some point.
That's the thing. Like, that guy, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt him. Like, if he wants to – now, I don't think he's going to become a great off-the-dribble three-point shooter.
Yeah, right.
But he might be all right. And I think he's going to become an okay catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. Whatever he puts his mind to, like, I don't – it's part of the reason I voted for him, frankly. Like, I don't have to worry about – what is he doing in the summer?
No.
What is he doing at night? Is he going to come to camp out of shape and play his way into shape? What are the other players on the team going to think when they sit? Like, I don't know. I don't have to worry about any of that. If I'm the coach of the Bucks, I don't have to worry about any of that.
No, you don't. I love his hunger and his thirst and his teammate skills and,
he's a killer.
He's a killer and he sets it every day, like to walk in that gym and feel his presence. You're looking at him in the weight room and you watch him put in the time shooting. You're just like, better keep up, Milwaukee Bucks. You better keep up.
That was a fun scene there. But not like I have never. So I did not go to game one of the finals. I now have a tradition where because the 2016 finals almost emotionally broke me being away from my daughter for 22 days in a row.
Yeah,
so I watched game one on television, which, okay. You know, it turns out you can watch a game on television. It's fine. It's okay.
Yes.
Went to game two. I saw Howard Beck, who's now been name checked twice on this podcast enough. and he said, "Hey man, you better a lot extra time to go pick up your credential." And I said, "Why?" And he's like, "Have you been outside?" And I said, "No." He's like, "Just you're going to need extra time." I have never seen anything like what Toronto is like right now.
No.
Like 10 blocks from the arena is all blocked off for people to stand and watch the game. And there are people lined up to get into those areas, wrapping around the Air Canada Center.
And getting there at 6:30 in the morning.
Like, how did you get to the game? I can't imagine. You can't walk there. You're going to be stopped every 2 feet.
So it's interesting. Our hotel is in very close proximity to the arena. And the gentleman who is our Minister of Transportation, Ben Mendoza, he's like, "It's so close. You know, I think you should walk." And I said, "Okay, that's cool." You know, I said, first game I have to go to the trucks and because the makeup's in a different location so you can pick me up. But second game, we start to walk. And I look at, you know, the area you just described, so just masses of people. And he goes, you know, you're going to have to walk by all those people. I go, no way. I said, I can't. These Raptors fans.
They're nuts.
They're nuts, and they want to talk ball. I'd be like, they'd be asking me 5 million questions en route to the arena. So I jumped in with Sage Steele, who was going down earlier than me to be on for SportsCenter. But the energy in the city, the fact that there's 29 Jurassic Parks in other parts of Canada, the fact it's not a city.
We can't call them all Jurassic Parks. We need to make up like little wing, like how they had areas of the Jurassic Park.
33 viewing parties at movie theaters in addition to the other locations for these collections of fans. It is an entire country rooting for one. It's not like the United States where there's 29 teams. It's not that. It's a whole country rooting for that team.
Someone told me, I didn't think of this, and it's so obvious. Someone with the team told me, you know, one of the reasons they're doing all these Jurassic Parks, it's fun to watch games outside. Although I don't know if you can bring alcohol into the Jurassic Parks. They need to let that happen.
Well, you can do other things more discreetly, and they're doing a lot of that.
You can. I'm sure there's things going on. I'm just saying, it's fun. Being outside with beer and sports is objectively a great thing.
So fun.
But someone with the team told me, you know, the only sports team in Toronto that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment does not own and it is the Blue Jays and the Sky Dome. It's like, if we own that, every game we would just have filled that. There would be 50,000 people if the Blue Jays were off watching a Raptors game at Sky Dome. Anyway.
It's pretty cool. It's very cool.
People, you know I love anything that can save me time, and ZipRecruiter is here with the technology to make looking for a job or looking for someone to take your job much easier. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, what you want, and its technology will do the work for you. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you'll like, put your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone just like you. If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know so that if you're interested in the job, bam, you can apply. They've done all the matching work for you. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. My listeners can download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Do not wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. We are here, and it's 1-1 after the Warriors do what they do. Come out in the third quarter when they're looking vulnerable, a little wobbly, roll off an 18-0 win. You were an 18-0 run and win the game. You were at practice today. I got here right after practice today. Durant is out for game 3. Mm-hmm. Klay is questionable. I mean, the guy is as tough as they come in the entire NBA. When he started doing the old man stomp, and has to be taken out of the game, I thought, well, that's it. His season's over. Like, you don't see guys walk like – you see guys sort of jog it off or whatever, say, hey, I just need a ball. That looked like something bad happened, and I thought he was done. You got to talk to him? Was he on your list of people you got to interview today?
Yeah, we spoke to him, and the first thing I was looking for when he came in the room was, what's his gait like? How's he walking? And I – especially when he first came in the room, I thought, ooh, this is not good. And then on his way out, I just kind of looked across the room at Mark Jackson, who was, that didn't look good. And I'm like, no. And I said at the end, I thought he tried to put a little spring in his step. And we asked him the question. I said, Klay, I remember blood dripping down your ear in the Western Conference Finals against Houston. And, you know, watching you take that hit, stay in the game, and then come back, and then the blood dripping. Several of your teammates have made note on more than one occasion there was absolutely no way you should have been playing in last year's NBA Finals, and the ankle you had is part of the reason they were so anxious to wrap that series up. And he said, listen, unless my leg is dangling, he goes, I am playing. In this day and age, to have a guy with that threshold and just say, like, he's relishing, he's like, this is the best time of year for a player, like, good luck. Sometimes it's a head coach's job, in my mind, to protect a player from themselves. And is that Steve Kerr's job in game 3? I don't know the answer to the question.
I think that's what they're doing with Durant. Clearly they're afraid of Durant re-injuring it, and like, we're going to buy as much. I wonder if they're down 2-0, is Durant playing tomorrow?
Yeah.
I bet he might. I bet he would play.
I have to say this, you know, it's a really interesting moment. So we'll we'll find out about Clay. I think he'll probably try to give it a go. His comment to me was 60 to 70% is better than not playing for my teammates or something like that. So you love that attitude. Because I spent so much of game two in the back hallways trying to track down multiple injuries because the Warriors were dropping like flies, there's a moment at which toward the end of the first half, Kevin Durant squat. There's a very small monitor that I can watch the game on, and Kevin Durant squats down next to me. And I just thought, I so wanted people to see him in that moment because, you know, especially I know you were a UConn women's basketball fan as a kid, right? Like in your formative years, I'm sure you're going to get grief for that, but.
Why? No, what grief?
I would hope not because that's just like, they are the best of the absolute best. Anyway,
I'm from Connecticut.
Yeah.
That's all we got. Once the Whalers moved.
Right.
We got nothing.
Yeah. And Juno and that, you know, you talk about sustained excellence. They were the epitome of it, but. Kevin squatted down for just a couple minutes because I think his intention was to go meet his teammates and talk to staff. And I love that level of engagement. But I thought there wasn't a fan in sports anywhere, regardless basketball, football, hockey, you name it, who hasn't been so invested in a team where you're sitting there watching on your television monitor and you're yelling at the TV because of the outcomes you want. And I'm listening to Kevin sort of, you know, I think somebody went to bring a screen towards Stephanie. He's like, don't screen. I just thought, I'm watching sort of a fan, but with the nuance of one of the best in the world to do it. I just thought this was this very cool moment. I could never get it on the telecast. So I'm glad I'm here with you.
There you go.
Yeah, it was so cool to see him like that. I thought, gosh, any one of us could relate to what Kevin was just doing there.
Yeah.
Just rooting like hell.
Who's the team that drove you to that as a fan? Who was your team that you cared way too much about?
Oh boy. I was, you know, believe it or not, I was a huge NFL fan. And I loved the Oakland Raiders.
Wow.
I freaking loved
it. The NFL is so funny how so many fans, you have these national teams like the Steelers and the Cowboys and the Raiders that so many fans like better than the teams that they're near.
It's so funny. Like, I think it's interesting that I was, you know, I went to Providence College, so obviously I'm a Providence fan, but I was a huge Georgetown fan. Like, I loved sort of their mean mugging toughness. Michael Smith pressure in the basketball, Michael Graham with the elbows flying. I loved Georgetown. Coach Thompson with the towel over his shoulder, stalking the lines, pulling his guys off the floor. I loved Georgetown. I loved the Oakland Raiders. I loved them. Cliff Branch on one side, Freddie Biletnikoff on the other. I didn't care. I loved Kenny Stabler. I loved his hair flopping out of the back of the helmet. I loved them. So it's interesting. Two teams that most people despised, for some reason they appealed to me.
First of all, I have so many comments. Number one, Oakland Raiders. Mm-hmm. Now they're in Las Vegas now.
Are they really?
I don't know.
Once my children came, you can't watch football for 3 hours.
I don't think
Sunday.
I could name 15 football players.
No, I don't watch anymore.
Oakland Raiders, Los Angeles Raiders is pretty good.
Yeah.
Oakland Raiders is the coolest sports team name, period. Yeah. Their logo and their color scheme is the best and most influential in the history of American sports.
Yeah. I didn't know until this year, that Damian Lillard has an Oakland Raiders symbol on his arm. Tattoo.
He's zero.
Yeah.
Because he's O.
Oh, no, I mean, he's so prideful of his roots and sort of how his parents, you know, working hard to provide for he and his family. It's just, he's so shaped by that. But I for all my time covering Damian Lillard, I don't pay a ton of attention to tattoos unless they say something like, this is important to me. But he did. I saw his Oakland Raider tattoo. I thought that was cool.
People, it's that time of year again. Basketball's home stretch. This is where all the hard work pays off when we see who's tough enough to be crowned the champion of the NBA. It's where players are more driven than ever to go further, faster, and longer. And that's what drives Goodyear to make tires that do the very same thing. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the basketball court. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. Goodyear, more driven. On Clay.
Yeah.
You know, part of my job is to... Free agency's around the corner, right? What's a good contract? What's a bad contract? Oh, that player's 29. I don't know. In year four of that contract, it's going to get ugly. Give Clay all the money. He's not all NBA. You know, his offense, he's a little bit of a combo. The Warriors, this is one of those cases where, like, You give him all the money. You just, I don't care how old he is. I don't care. This guy is a founding father of this organization, as much as Curry is, as much as anyone else, as much as Draymond is. Mm-hmm. He's a partner. He does not care what you ask him to do. What? How many shooting guards ever have been told, hey, you know what? You're better at defending opposing point guards than our point guard.
That's right.
Do that every game.
Every night. You know how hard that is? I mean, like, he moves laterally real quick, right? And he's long and he's persistent and all those things that make him great. But, you know, he doesn't have blazing north to south speed. Some of that's just, I'm checking you, period. And my length is going to be problematic. I have great admiration for him. I really do. I have a question for you though, Zach.
Yes.
You know, if he's hampered or if he can't play, where do they go offensively? And would you see Nick Nurse, not that he'd employ that box and one throughout because you can't give them a steady diet. One, what does the offense for Golden State look like if Clay doesn't play or can't, you know, move and, you know, sprint baseline to baseline, he can't come off any split action? What does the Golden State Warrior offense look like? Do they play more through the post? What with DeMarcus?
I think you try Cousins, right, and see not even necessarily to score, but exactly what you talked about. You know, cutting off Cousins, you push with Draymond whenever you can, and a lot of Steph pick and roll. I think Quinn Cook would have to play a lot just for the. I mean, his shooting changed game too,
no doubt.
Going from three guys who can't shoot threes to just two guys who can't shoot threes, or even just one. It's every one you go is an exponential difference for Steph.
How about the confidence? And Steph telling me in the post-game interview, I died laughing. Like, and I, you know, you can't really laugh, but when I asked him about Quinn, he said he's the most confident guy on the team. I almost wanted to laugh in the interview, like, on a team with you, Kevin, and Clay, Quinn is the most confident. I love that.
Well, Quinn, he's, you know, Draymond I saw said, you know, he's our Patty Mills. But he's not their Patty Mills. He doesn't play enough to be their Patty Mills.
What do you
Mills.
Mean by that?
I just think like the score first point guard size guy who comes off the bench. He needs to, he is a pushover on, like when Chris Paul saw Quinn Cook on him, Chris Paul's 6 feet tall and he was like, oh, this guy, I might as well be guarded by nobody. I'm just going to kind of push him around and shoot. Like he just needs to get a little tougher defensively, but we see him a lot. To me, the more interesting part is the other end because they found something in game two with Clay as Kawhi's primary defender.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because Clay's a really good on ball defender. Off ball, he's not quite as impactful.
And
they put Iguodala on Siakam. If you have Kawhi's got the ball and you have Iguodala and Draymond on the back line as help defenders, all of a sudden you got like, whatever, 30 feet of arms or whatever
correct.
It is.
And great intellect.
And two of the smartest guys in the whole league.
No, they absolutely.
And one of my big questions for the series was, A, who would guard Kawhi and would they go to Clay to do it more than I expected, frankly? And B, can Clay handle it? Because Kawhi has size and strength and weight on Clay. And that feels exploitable. But it looked really good in game two. And if he can't do that, then you've got to go reset the matchups. Andre's got to do it. Andre's banged up. Who's Clay guarding? All right. Who's on Siakam? What is it? Who's Draymond was guarding Kyle Lowry in the second half of the game and doing quite well on him. Where do you have to move Draymond now? It's everything ripples on defense from is Clay healthy enough to take that pounding? Because it's a pound. I mean, Kevon Looney, it looked like one of those
things. He bounced off him.
It looked like one of those things where like, a supervillain in a movie
correct.
Throws somebody through a wall 20 feet away.
It's incredible to me. That's the first thing, you know, we sat with Andre. I can't remember where, but the one thing he said to us was, I'm not even sure Kawhi understands. He goes, he probably does, but he goes, for me, it's his strength. He goes, it is so forceful to deal with Kawhi from a physical strength standpoint. Like, it's almost like, you know, one of the things that Mike Budenholzer said about Giannis, like, I don't think he gets enough credit for his strength. It's the same with Kawhi. Neither guy gets enough credit for their strength. It's a great question because if you're 60 to 70%, the only thing is, you know, I don't know what your perception is. Kawhi doesn't look right to me either. And they're not breathing a word.
He's not right.
One of their players accidentally let slip in an interview. I'm not going to say which one. Something like we were asking him this, that, or the other thing about Kawhi. he said something like, you know, consider that his knee is not even right. And I went, ooh, whoops. So I think his knee, whatever one, it is bothering him. I'm watching him go up and down the floor. I'm like, he looks like he's laboring at times. Do you remember the play in Milwaukee where he dunks and he goes to turn around and he dead yeah. stops?
Which was like game three, yeah, I think. It was like a lot of games ago.
I saw this guy. He didn't want to move. All of us have felt that kind of pain on a basketball court where you just go, ooh, ooh, that wasn't good.
Yeah, I saw him walking to the podium, I think, in Toronto after game two of the finals, so 2 days ago. He was limping. Like, you didn't have to look hard to see that he was limping.
Right.
His left leg was stiff, and he was walking like that to the podium. Now, a lot of guys after games are like, they just got treatment. They're not walking right, whatever. So we'll see how he looks. But he looked – and laboring is a word. I have a column previewing game three coming up either tonight or tomorrow. Laboring is a word I use. There were a couple times where getting back on defense, he just didn't have the – like, he would take a jump shot, and it would miss – and that transition from landing to running was just not something that he had in his legs.
Right.
And defensively, he just hasn't put his mark on this series quite yet.
No way. I agree. Because you feel him for stretches of a game where you're going, this guy's not scoring. Like, Kawhi's got him. And everybody, you might as well pass because you're not scoring. Because Kawhi's in that mode.
And they have him, they've had him on a bunch of different people, but they've had him on Draymond a lot. And what's been interesting to me was I assumed going into the series that if they put him on Draymond, which I expected they would, the point of that was going to be to switch a lot on Curry, Draymond pick and rolls. They have not done that. In fact, they're switching overall. I don't know how much I trust the tracking numbers, but certainly on the low end of teams that play Golden State, that's where they are in switching. They're not switching as much off the ball. Pascal is chasing Klay Thompson.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I addressed this in the column too. I wonder if it will change because they've gotten burned, particularly Steph as screener. They do not want to switch off of Steph. And I wonder if it's just let's keep it simple and just say, okay, that guy, if you're guarding that guy, you just don't think think about anything else.
Correct.
Now, if there's an emergency that happens, someone else has to read that because you've gotten screened, you're falling behind, someone else is going to have to switch for you, but you are not switching. Maybe it's that. I wonder if Nick Nurse is sort of saving some cards for the middle of this year. Let's start one way and see how that goes, and we'll save some cards for the middle of the series. But I thought Golden State in the second game kind of they didn't figure out Toronto, but they scored really well in the half court. And it wasn't on the pick and roll. It was all the off ball stuff. It was all the back screening. It was all the cutting.
Which is what Nick Nurse said to me at the end of the third.
Really?
He said, we just kept losing them in back cuts.
And I think defending Golden State without Durant, it's just a different.
Totally different. Different deal.
A different, it's more movement. They're less predictable. They're not better. Let me be clear. I keep getting asked this. I got to ask this on Get Up last week. Zach, what do you think about this narrative that they're better without Durant? I don't think that was ever a thing. I don't think anyone ever said that.
I feel like Greeny was throwing that and he believed it. Cause I feel like I maybe remembered thinking that. I'm like, no. Just because they play stylistically different, because they have to, right? They get back to movement. They're sprinting. You've got to stick with, you know, Steph and Klay for the full shot clock. Like, yeah, it's different to guard them. But it doesn't, it's just such an absurd narrative.
Well, my stock response has been, and I said this on Get Up, that question is a bogus red herring question. It's not a real question.
Yeah.
The question that is actually interesting is, do they need him to win the championship? And Jay Will asked me, well, do they? Answer your own question. I said, no, I don't think they do. And he was aghast, like, well, they're down. I think the finals hadn't started yet. So they weren't down 1-0. Maybe they were. I can't remember what day it was. He was like aghast.
Would have been great if you set it down 0-1.
I think I did. I can't remember. I honestly can't remember.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I mean, A, they won a championship in 73 games without him. And B, I'm not saying they will win. I'm just saying
they can
win. If you simulated this Raptors team versus this Warriors team without Kevin Durant 1,000 times on a computer – a certain percentage of those times that is not trivial and maybe even as a majority, the Warriors are going to win. Like right. that, they might not win this particular series, especially now that half their team is injured.
Right.
But they're going to, like, they can win. Like, it's, yeah. they can beat anybody 4-7.
I agree. I want to go back to something you just said because it's just a little intriguing to me, how different Nick Nurse seems to be. And I mean, like somebody asked me, did he outcoach Steve Kerr in game one? I'm like, that's just so silly to me. Okay. And like, I thought, right, it wasn't the X and O's where they got beat, the Warriors. They got beat with speed. They got beat in transition. Anyway, I don't even want to get down that rabbit hole. Just to your point about, is Nick Nurse saving a couple of things? Just like Steve Kerr is probably saving a couple of things. But like, one thing you saw consistently with Toronto, and I wondered how the players were absorbing it during the course of the year, and we pop in for a game and don't necessarily have the time to talk to people because we're not staying 2 or 3 days, right? We're getting our meetings, whatever. Anyway, the constant lineup shuffling, the different strategies, the just throwing things at the wall, so to speak, to see if they stick. Like Nick's willingness to be flexible and trying to innovate and throw things. The fact that he institutes a box in one and Jeff Van Gundy, incredulous, he's like, I don't think I've ever seen that in the NBA. I just think it's cool. But Fred VanVleet said to us this morning, and he wasn't, I almost don't want to go here, but he brought it up, so I think it's okay. Like he's, like he said with Coach Casey, he goes, you knew every single day what you were going to get. And we love that as players because there's routine, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, there were times that was like, gosh, you were questioning how there's nothing that we know we can count on day to day in terms of expectation. But he said, ultimately, it's been a great thing. So there's different ways to skin the cat. I just thought it was interesting.
Very fitting you said that in reference to Dwayne Casey, because that's one of his favorite expressions, different ways to skin the cat. Whenever people would criticize Toronto's offense, it's like boring. Yeah, there's different ways to skin a cat.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I just thought Fred, his honesty was refreshing in that he said, there were times where he was frustrated or he didn't understand during the course of the year, but ultimately the way the season played out, I think he was essentially, without putting words in his mouth, saying there was a method to Nick Nurse's madness, so to speak, and all his experimentation.
I think for a first-year head coach, now obviously he's not a first-year head coach, he's a first-year NBA head coach. He managed the season really well. And it's not just Kawhi and the load management thing, which is, frankly I think is above Nick Nurse's head anyway. I just think he knew when to hit the accelerator and knew when to back off and knew when to just say, hey, we're just going to do film today. Hey, we're not going to do any film today. Hey, this is an off day or a lockout day. And I just, you know, tactically, like they handled the Ibaka coming off the bench thing. Like it worked really smoothly. Like everyone bought in. And Nick Nurse deserves a lot of credit for that too. I think he's coached. Has it been fun? He's like, when you get a new guy to add to your between quarters interview list, right? I mean, yeah, it's like he's a new addition this year.
I find him very interesting. And I just think his story is a fascinating one to take an unexpected journey to be the head coach of an NBA team, to basically beg your way into coaching a G League team by driving past an arena and saying, geez, we should probably have one there. I like his story. I like that he was a player coach, and I don't know. I think it's a cool story. I like different journeys, and yes, it's cool, and it's nice that he's very open. No Greg Popovich in the playoffs for me this year. It was all Steve Kerr and Nick Nurse. And
too easy. We need a hard ass
for
you.
No. I remember having a walk up to Steve Kerr. I think it was his first, NBA Finals game one where he went down 20 and in the first quarter. No, it was like,
no.
Oh, yeah, it was one of them. And he comes storming over me and he goes, Doris, it's over 20. You know, I got to do this. And he apologized in the post game presser. I said, I don't get to decide. They tell me what to do and I do it.
I wish you could add post game with Pop at the end of game seven. So you could be like, Pop, one question. So not fouling there, you just let the clock run out. Like that was a strategy you were going for, the greatest coach in the history of basketball. You couldn't think maybe. I thought, how about the end of game two of the finals with a 4-second differential?
Oh, yes.
Toronto elects not to foul.
Yes.
Which, so this is actually one where I've changed my viewpoint a little bit. A year ago or 2 years ago, I would have said you have to foul immediately. It's a no-brainer. It's a 4-second differential. The other team can almost literally run out the clock, right? You Correct. Shoot with one on the shot clock. Yes. You moonball it up there. You hit the rim and the game's over. What I've learned more and more in these situations is no team does that. Every team is going to shoot like Andre did.
Yeah.
Andre shouldn't have taken that shot. He made it. He probably shouldn't have taken it. He should have held it another couple seconds.
No doubt.
And taken it. But teams are just not wired that way. They're mm-hmm. not going to do the moon ball off the rim. And they nearly got a steal. Very oh. nearly got a steal.
So close.
So my thinking has changed to like, I actually kind of like the way that they played it until you get to about 10 or 11 seconds. If you have a chance to foul, which they did, and they had a chance to foul a foul shooter, then you have to foul. But I don't mind playing for a turnover for like 12, 13 seconds.
I agree.
That's a year ago, 2 years ago, I would have said you got to foul at 27. You got to foul on the inbounds, even if it's Curry. Now, right. I wouldn't have said that. But.
Well, Jim Valvano used to do that in college. Like he would just lengthen the game, just lengthen. He played the foul game so early. It's an interesting dilemma, I think. And I was like, I'm with you. I would play 10 to 12 seconds, try to make a play, especially with the way Toronto's built. Length, athleticism, speed. Like, give yourself a chance in that instance. And you're damn right, they almost got one.
Think about it. He gets that steal, and Nick Nurse is a genius.
Genius.
A genius Correct. For not fouling.
Yeah.
Listeners, you know I like anything that can save me time, and SeatGeek has emerged as the go-to time saver for buying tickets to anything, NBA playoffs, any other sporting event, concerts, comedy shows, Broadway shows, more. SeatGeek has all the tickets you're looking for. It searches the entire secondary market almost and puts it all in one place that's super easy to use. It rates every deal on a scale of 1 to 10. It has green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It has an interactive seating map so you know exactly where your seat is, whether anything's in the way, all of that stuff. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It is by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. They help me get tickets to Hamilton, which is a tough ticket to get. SeatGeek will, for now, even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use the promo code I'm about to tell you about. Got to download the SeatGeek app. Use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOWE for $10 off your first purchase on SeatGeek.
It was a wild end of game. And then Andre takes that shot, and I'm sitting there like, Andre, no! Oh, wow, it went in.
Yeah.
Never doubt Andre Iguodala.
And 2 for 15. What he had missed 10 straight. You know, I have to be honest, though. I really, after game one, I thought Toronto was going to go up 2-2, and then I thought Golden State would come back here and get two. And now I don't have a single expectation for game three, Zach, and I think it's because I don't know who's playing. Like, I don't know what Clay is. And
I wrote about this today, is like, after 4 years of I can close my eyes and I know what Cleveland is going to do on every single possession. Where's Curry? Okay, come up and screen. Come up back. And I know that, okay, with the exception of the 1 year where they won, Cleveland's defense is not going to be up for this. And then they get Durant and it's not fair. And here's another pull-up three from the left wing, dagger over. Even setting aside the injuries, I really don't have a feel for this series after two games. I don't have a lot of, like, certainty over, okay, this matchup worked and we're going to see this, and like the response to X is going to be Y. I don't even think like a lot of patterns have emerged yet in how the teams are playing stylistically, how they're moving around. Like, I think this, it's almost a total black box to me, even leaving aside the fact that two of the all-stars in this series are injured, or Clay and KD, and Kawhi's status is unclear. I mean, he's going to play, but his health, whatever percentage is that, is unclear. I don't really know what game three is going to look like, and that seems new to me.
It's why it's, you know, one of my favorite moments in these finals is, you know, we have the great opportunity to meet with the coaches on the day of the game. Maybe, I should know this by now, maybe 90 and whatever the time is before the game, and just to hear what is popping in their head, what scenario. And I have to say this, I just thought this was so great. Like, so DeMarcus sits 45 days, plays 8 minutes in game one, and gave you some passing out of the post. Didn't try to score it. You could tell his rhythm wasn't there, but it wasn't enough that I thought, oh my God, it's an absolute must that he play in game two. And yet, our producer Tim Corrigan says to Jeff, you know, something like, what would you do? Or I can't remember, but anyway, right away, Jeff says, I'd start DeMarcus Cousins before the game. And sure enough, we get into that pregame coaches meeting and Steve Kerr says, I'm starting DeMarcus Cousins. I got such joy out of that. Like,
and
I
have to then keep that a secret.
Oh yeah, you keep it a secret, no doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
I had a dilemma like that in the Bucks series. I knew the night before that they were going to start Brogdon.
Yeah,
and I didn't know. I was like, is this worth?
Never. It's never worth it.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Why would you do that? Like,
So
it's all going to come out anyway. And what, you're going to get like 2 seconds worth of like?
I get a pat on the back.
Okay.
Which matters.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cousins. So I was impressed. Like, they found such a rhythm playing without Durant that the thing that worried me about Cousins beyond pick and roll defense and is he in shape and he's going to playing himself into
you
shape
thought he couldn't
in
play
the finals.
They'd attack him in pick and roll. He couldn't guard laterally and he's off the floor. And that didn't happen.
But even beyond that, I just thought, I don't know if I want to plop a guy who needs the ball and wants to shoot into what they have going on. And I was actually quite impressed with how he sort of was like, I get it. You guys got this rhythm. Like, I'll be another Draymond in the post. Like, I'll be another post facilitator. I'm not going to be calling the ball for the ball and backing down. And like, unless I have a mismatch, I thought he sublimated how he usually played. Now, then you put him on the second unit. And he's driving from the top of the key and doing all that stuff. Fine. Like, Steph and Draymond are off the floor. I thought he fit himself in a way that frankly impressed me. That said, the Raptors have to do better exploiting him on defense. And Lowry in particular has to, I love Kyle. I love everything about his game. Love the charges. I love the screens, all of this. At some point, you got to put some stuff in the box score. Like, and we're at that point now.
Well, look at how much better. I mean, the reality is when Kyle has a Kyle game, to me, they're a drastically different team. When he's aggressive and scoring, it feels different. Pascal Siakam, I'm curious about something. You know, he just, the number of 25 and 30 point games in the playoffs and stuff. And then, you know, you have the tough shooting night. Like, what ultimately, like, how good do you think he can be?
I think he can for sure be a multiple time all-star.
Yeah.
And I thought he had a case. I did not vote him here, but I thought he had a case for a third team all NBA. Like, if you were of the school, which I was not, that LeBron should not make all NBA.
Yeah. 28-8-8.
I put him on.
I'm like, 28-8-8. I mean, until Christmas Day, we were talking about him in the MVP race.
No, because my alternatives, like, look, I can't, Jackie left him off.
Yeah.
We talked about it.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, look, they didn't, and her reasoning was just as much, not to speak for her, but we talked about it, was just as much. I mean, he has to have some blame for the chaos engulfed their roster.
She had valid points.
And that stuff translates to the court and to losing. I get that. I just cannot look myself in the mirror and be like, yeah, I picked LaMarcus Aldridge over LeBron James for all. I just can't, or whoever it is. I just couldn't. It was like one of those gut things with MVP.
Absolutely.
I was like, it just felt wrong. Laying in bed, I was like, I just can't do it.
Right.
It's LeBron James, and he put up 28-8-8. Sorry, it's got to be on the All NBA.
Right.
But I thought Pascal had a case for that spot.
Yeah, I just think it's incredible that this guy who picks up the game so late, and obviously it's really raw athletically, but I mean, a year ago can't get in the rotation consistently in the most important games and then goes off for game one, struggles shooting in game two. But I don't know, I find him a fascinating case. And a guy like him, it feels like there's a wide range of possibility, which is why I asked you the question.
Well, if you watch the shot, I think he was 5 for 18.
He was 5 for 18, yeah.
And it's a lot of those little hooks and bunnies and weird floaters that on a bad night, they're going to rim out. And that's what happened. It's like a lot of putbacks and just shots within 6 feet of the rim, which are tricky shots.
That his timing is funky down there? Like, he does. And one of the things that Nick Nurse has said to me during the course of the year, and he said it in the in-game interview, he's like, when he gets in there, he is a little bit unorthodox, but as long as he's on balance and he's not playing too fast. He's getting to his spots, but he's on balance and he's making good decisions and he's not releasing it until he's in a good spot. I don't know. I just find him fascinating because I do think there's this wide range and some of it, you know, we talk about Giannis and not being afraid because you know this guy's going to be in the gym. I get the sense Siakam is the
same. He's not afraid of the moment. He's not afraid of Draymond Green. He's not afraid of any of that.
Mm-mm.
I did think it was interesting that in the fourth quarter, the first part of the fourth quarter of game two, they put Bogut on Siakam. And put other people on Ibaka.
Wow.
Because every team is now, you know, Philly put Embiid on Siakam.
Right.
They tried Brook Lopez on Siakam. People have tried that and found that it works. And I was also impressed with Bogut, by the way, who didn't get a lot of pub, to go from nothing to putting in three lobs like it was 2014 and he was hopping up and getting dunks off Clay floppy plays and all that. Like it was impressive.
It was very impressive. It was, I'm sorry, I'm just laughing because we went to break and Jeff called him Air Bogut and I almost died.
What I miss being at the games. I miss the quips. I miss the quips.
Classic. Absolutely classic.
He was good. I mean, that's strength in numbers.
No, and listen, that's such an incredible thing about these NBA players at times, the ability to keep yourself prepared. And I mean that physically and mentally. When you go stretches and you're out of the rotation or this matchup just isn't for you, one series you're a complete non-factor because it just doesn't work. And then he gets put in. The ability to come in and do that, whether it's Andrew Bogut or anybody else, I find that absolutely incredible.
I have to ask you this because it received so much publicity over the years. We are at the Drake finals. Has there been any interaction with Drake? You have a little bit of a pass. Drake has a little bit of a pass as a Doris Burke fan. Has there been anything?
Not one thing.
Wow.
Yeah. This isn't, I mean, listen, I know he sort of created this hullabaloo and I think there was game one, Mike mentioned him, but he said something like, and he goes flying past so-and-so and he didn't want to mention Drake's name. And Mark and Jeff went at him. They're like, that is Drake. You can't do that, Mike. He goes, I didn't want to draw. Like, I think as a broadcast, it's interesting because we always show celebrities. But the reality is, and I said this on a local station in Canada, I love his passion. And so I have no problem with whatever he does because I grew up a Knicks fan and I watched Spike Lee, you know, put the choke sign up to.
I mean, if I was.
Or absorb the choke sign from Reggie, but be provoked to put the choke sign up to Spike. But my point is, this is about the Raptors organization, Masai doing what Masai did to come here, the controversial decisions, the trade of DeMar, all of that. It's about the 15 men on the roster and Nick Nurse and their journey. So I think it's an important question for us. How much do we talk about Drake? Listen, we have a responsibility to the series. These are the NBA finals and he's a star and he's their global ambassador. But I think it's important that we navigate that appropriately.
Interesting.
It's, yeah.
See, to me, it's all wrapped up into he is the most famous person from Toronto.
No
He's
doubt.
Been a fan of this team for
that's
a long
why
time.
We have, that's why Mike's got to call him and say Drake when the player flies through the. But it is an interesting question.
You don't want it to be about him.
Yes, exactly.
And
I think
he's pretty good at making it about him when he would like to get on, when he wants to get on the court and rub Nick Nurse's shoulders and all
that.
So nothing.
No, nada.
Maybe you made him angry. Maybe did you ever poke fun at him or something?
No.
Okay. He's a very accomplished. The star power at game two was ridiculous.
I love it. I'm thrilled that he's a part of the series. I'm thrilled that the Raptors are here. I think it's an incredible story. And listen, as you said, we started this podcast talking about the passion of an entire country for basketball. Like that to me is incredible. And he is absolutely part of that. I loved his comment when he was out in Jurassic Park, you know, sort of after the comments, after they wrap up the Eastern Conference Finals, where he said, we built this. And he was out at Jurassic Park. Like, there's incredible pride for this organization that they're in. I just think it's a cool story for a city, a country, and their global ambassador.
It's also really, when you zoom out and think about it.
Yeah.
Let's just say they actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
I picked the Warriors in seven.
Mm-hmm.
Game two, I think, really swung the series to the Warriors. Now, we'll see. The health stuff has obviously put everything
huge
in question. But
huge.
This is now a Warriors series to win.
Yeah.
Let's say the Raptors pull it off. I've been polling people around the league because I want to write about this. Are they the most randomly built championship? Randomly, I don't even know what I mean by randomly. Not quite haphazardly because
lottery pick, right?
Well, it's not even that as much as like, and it's not even that everyone knows that they.
So random how?
Well, everyone knows that they were going to try to tank. After they traded Rudy Gay, that was the plan. They almost traded Lowry to the Knicks, and that would have been you're in the toilet. And it's just all of the stuff, like, we've never had a hot, like, I use this term sort of loosely, but we've never really had a hired gun be the best player on a team that wins the championship. And if you were the team that gets thrown at me when I say, is this the most sort of randomly constructed championship team ever? Is, I mean, think of even how they got Lowry. They got Lowry because Houston wanted draft picks to trade for Harden.
And he was going to be a backup.
And he was
going to
back up Jose. He was backing up Jose Calderon.
And he was thinking to himself, don't trade me here because I didn't want to be a backup anymore.
To Jose Calderon, apology. That was ridiculous. and the team that gets thrown back at me a lot is the 2004 Pistons is sort of your classic. Like they just sort of got all of these guys in a series of smart and unrelated decisions. Like Ben Wallace is a throw in and then Sheed becomes available and this and that. I'm like, this almost feels more random than that. And then the follow up question is like, is there any lesson you can take if you're a GM of another team? Like look at what Toronto did. Like if they win the championship, what can they do? Obviously, right, one of the lessons is just make a lot of smart decisions. Like if you can trade Gravis Vasquez for two draft picks that become Ananobi and Powell, like you should do that. If you can draft Siakam at 27, you should do that. If you can get Marc Gasol at the right moment, you should do that. But I think maybe the overarching lesson is going to end up being about Kawhi and whether both the Spurs and a bunch of other teams missed the boat on trading for Kawhi. Like that. They should have been able to get more for Kawhi, and Toronto should have had to have given up more for Kawhi. Just a random aside. No, I've been thinking a lot about it.
It's an interesting supposition because, as you know, when a team wins the championship, look at the impact that Golden State had on the way people chose to play for a while.
Yeah,
so I remember. Seeing Dwayne Casey get fired and thinking, wow, that's the coach of the year and that's an incredible story to me. And, you know, when you listen to Masai explain it and say we had been doing the same thing over and over and I thought, what are we doing here? Like, I need to make a change. It took some guts. Like, that took guts.
That one took guts because you don't know who the next coach is going to be.
No.
And you don't know if it's going to translate into what you want in
and
the next
coach to be. And you have Mike Budenholzer and Nick Nurse,
mm-hmm.
and you decide on Nick Nurse. You don't know. I mean, you can have confidence and faith because you've watched Nick Nurse coach, but still, he's now got to step into, you know, people like to say all the time, that one seat over is an enormous jump for a coach. And I know Nick had been a coach for a long time, but this is his first run in the NBA. So he didn't know how that was going to work either. That takes chops.
Oh yeah.
That takes real chops.
And then you get not only, so you get an angry Kyle Lowry who's mad that his friend got traded.
Mad for months.
And Kyle isn't the most, Kyle can be a little bit, what is the right word?
Cantankerous.
Cantankerous. That is the exact word.
His cantankerousness has probably helped him.
Oh, no, there's no question about that. I'm just saying, like, you know, an angry Kyle Lowry is maybe not the easiest thing. And then you get thrown the most inscrutable superstar in sports in July.
Yes.
Like, okay, deal with this in a walk year.
Yes.
Make this guy happy. That's not an easy job.
No.
Give me one thing, little thing, big thing, whatever that we haven't talked about, or maybe we brushed aside. Give me one thing in game three as you're sitting there on the sideline. I'm interested to watch that or I'm going to have my eye on that. In game three.
Well, in the sideline role, I've really got to be paying attention. Like, I have to give a little shout-out to Ramona because she's the one who tipped me off about Steph. I have to say my mind is totally different as a sideline reporter because, you know, there's so many physical ailments, Zach, that my mind and
who's moving
observations are all going to be on physical health in that thing, the other thing I'll be watching, just from a purely curiosity standpoint is, what does Nick Nurse do on the defensive end? You know, you know, it was only a 5 minute stretch, but that 5 minute stretch, they did a good job with that box and one. Where does he sprinkle that in? You know, what are there two or three moves that he's holding, and what does Steve Kerr do? And, but really most of them, I'll tell you the truth, I didn't feel like I got to watch game two.
It's tough. You're in that.
I was sprinting back and forth and now it's funny, just like at some point I'll say, you might have to help me here at this end of quarter interview, because I'm not watching. I don't know what's going on. Like, is somebody on a run? Did the defense turn it? You know, it's just, it's interesting. But I also get some just cool, you know, cool times on the sideline, watching Nick get into the huddle and watching Steve get into the huddle, and or even just watching players interact with one another. You know, game one, I watched Steph Curry. DeMarcus had his first 3 or 4 minute stretch. And it, you know, I don't think it went overly smooth. And he's trying to find his footing in an NBA Finals game. This is just brutal.
Not easy.
And just to give you some sense of like what Steph is like, I mean, he basically walks around the entire backside of the huddle, gets himself so he's standing next to DeMarcus, and he's saying, "Get in the post, you know, just get in the post." Like, let's get, and he's trying to lift up his teammate. I don't know. These are little moments that I love to be privy to.
Speaking of Steph, and I'm sorry, I'm going to keep you for an extra 90 seconds. I'm a little bit annoyed that the finals, like subplot A of the finals, is like a quarter by quarter. Okay, who is the finals MVP now?
Hey, I can't stand it.
Like, is it Steph? Is it Draymond? What about Kawhi? Oh, but why didn't Steph win in 2015? Then we have this fiasco today about why were there votes for this? When did we start doing this? Like, finals MVP, I used to think when a team gets 3 wins,
yes.
Then I'm not even thinking about it until then.
It hasn't crossed my mind. The only thing I thought about was when I see these articles. We get so ahead of ourselves. Like, people are already worried about July 1. Can we just watch the finals?
That I understand, because that's big, and you have two guys in this finals who are at the center of that, plus Clay, who's a third.
I get it, but I don't want to talk about it right now.
I don't want to talk about it either, but I get that. I don't get why we have to litigate in real time who is the finals MVP and how much it matters that Steph has never won a finals MVP.
Would we be litigating if he had already won one?
No, of course not. It's the fact that he didn't win it in 2015 is why this is a thing.
With all due respect to Andre Iguodala, I thought Steph was the MVP of that series.
I have said many times, and I continue to see this misconstrued on Twitter, I voted for LeBron. I was one of the 4 LeBron voters.
You could have easily. Hey, listen, that is totally understandable. Do you get hit for that?
No, what I get hit for is I see it every now and then. Zach has publicly recanted that vote and said he should have voted for Curry. No, I have never done that. And what I have said is I voted for LeBron. If I had voted for a Warrior, it would have been Curry. And I thought it was crazy. Not crazy, because Andre had a great series. I thought it was surprising that everyone who voted for the Warriors voted for Iguodala. Not one Warrior voter voted for Curry. I don't recant the LeBron vote. I think LeBron should have been the MVP of the finals, even in a losing cause. I stand by that vote. All I've said is I would have voted for Curry had I chosen
to vote for the Warrior. Now, that's a great point. And I absolutely 100% agree. Because that was one of the single most dominant stretches I've ever seen in my life. He was absolutely brilliant.
So I don't care about the finals MVP until the team gets to 3 wins.
I'm with you.
But Curry is real, and all that leadership stuff and all that is very,
huge,
very real.
No doubt.
All right. I don't think I have a thing that I'm watching in game 3 that we haven't talked about.
That would have been a good return question, because it's funny. I don't view it through that prism. I'm like, okay, I've got to pay attention to, okay, is Clay moving okay? And, you know, Kyle Lowry, I don't think his thumb is not right. I'll tell you whose else's hand is not right is Fred VanVleet. I'm watching Alex McKechnie wrap his finger constantly trying to get the swelling out of his finger. So I don't think he's 100%. The number of people, like, always at this time of year, people are banged up, but this is incredible.
Yeah, and I'll say this. If Clay doesn't play, this is going to sound hyperbolic, and maybe it is. I don't know. If Clay doesn't play and they win, the Warriors win game 3, to me, that's one of the crowning achievements of the Steph Curry-Draymond Green partnership. If they can take that roster, which is limited even with Clay, it's down a bunch of guys, I don't care if they're at home. This is a really good Toronto team that, you know, they're not completely healthy either, but at least they have everybody. They have, other than Anunoby, who may or may not play.
Right.
That would be a monumental win without Clay.
I agree. I'm watching them win last game and I'm thinking this is nothing more than championship medal. Like, I get it. There's strategy involved and they did some things and certain guys stepped in, like, as you mentioned, Bogut and DeMarcus and the decision to make that. I just remember thinking this, you want to know what championship medal is? This is it right here. Guts and toughness. And guys are dropping like flies, and they're just playing.
Well,
they
just keep playing. The shots that Steph and Clay made in the second quarter, when there was a moment, at least in person, it felt like it to me, where that game was teetering on the edge of getting away from them.
No question.
Where it felt like this is about to be a Raptors by 25 blowout.
Yes.
And they reeled it back in. And the third quarter got all the attention. To me, they won the game in the second quarter when they reeled it back in.
In fact, I was upset I hadn't gone back to that in my post-game interview with Steph. And the other thing I was upset about is I didn't ask him about the moment with Kevin Durant when Kevin was walking him up at the half and they were talking. But, you know.
Don't beat yourself up. You're beating yourself up too much, Doris Burke. You're a legend and you're a Hall of Famer. And you have better things to do than sit here and talk anymore about this series with me. Doris Burke, everyone knows where to find you and see your work. Go eat an early dinner on East Coast time, and I will see you at Oracle Arena tomorrow. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on.
It's so much fun. We always sort of meander and get off the topic, but it was fun.
Thanks, DB.
You got it.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.